Welcome to Mental Health Monday. My name is Mick Coyle. Coming up on the programme this week.
It's definitely not attention seeking. It actually is a sign that something isn't right and we need to try and help those people. Sometimes still people brush them off. You're not ill enough to get the help you need.
And actually they do end up in hospital. There has to be a mechanism in place that protects that young person and helps them in the future. Are those mechanisms in place right now at the moment?
From the evidence we heard, no, they're not.
And I'll be reminding you how you can make connections with mental health organisations within your community. It's Mental Health Monday.
Mental Health Monday with Mick Coyle.
Tackling the stigma.
Really, really interesting edition today. Coming off the back of an all-party parliamentary group, cross-party MPs, sitting down and looking at the issue of self-harm and how we, as a country, England in particular, focuses on and focuses services on young people in a way that they need and understand it. Liz Twist is the MP who is the chair of the all-party parliamentary group, and you'll be hearing from her as part of this week's show. It's a fascinating conversation. Stand by for that one. World Mental Health Day is on the way as well. Don't forget about that on the 10th of October. And there's something else that I'm involved in across the whole Bauer Media Group, which is part of the group that we work for here at Mental Health Monday. What we're trying to do is get people to come together ahead of World Mental Health Day and pledge an act of kindness. What do we mean by that? Well, simple thing. The real simple things that make big differences to people's lives. Looking out for somebody, making a call to someone you hadn't spoken to, picking up shopping for somebody who can't get it at the moment. Those sorts of simple things. If you go to the website, where'syourheadat.org, you can click on the link, pledge kindness there. And I'm going to do that as I'm talking to you just so that I know that it definitely works. On there, you can then see a map of the UK. You then click on the area in which you live, and then you can pledge an act of kindness. Say what it is you're going to do. You can pop your photo on there, and then that will appear on the map. We're trying to get 10,000 pledges of kindness between now and the 10th of October. So the 10th of October is World Mental Health Day. We're trying to get 10,000 pledges of kindness in that time. Already, the map's lighting up quite nicely as I record this today. London's looking good. The Northwest, yes, looking good. Glasgow and Edinburgh, looking good as well. The big sort of conurbations. Absolutely, though, wherever you are across England, Wales, Scotland, or Northern Ireland, if you listen to this now, head to that website, where'syourheadat.org, and pledge kindness between now and the 10th of October. I'd really appreciate you do that. And of course, as many people who can get involved in that will really make a difference. Let's get back to the matter in hand. Our conversation with Liz Twist, MP. Details in the notes section of the podcast as to where you can read this full report, by the way. But the report was looking at the support available for young people who self-harm. And some of their findings show there is a lot of work that needs to be done. I sat down with Liz Twist, MP, who's the chair of the all-party parliamentary group, to find out some more. And we started off by talking about the scope and the scale of this inquiry.
Yeah, we thought it was important to look at the issue of self-harm in young people up to the age of 25, because we know that's a particular issue, and because we know that it can be part of a pathway towards either, you know, suicidal thoughts or even people trying to end their lives. So we thought it was really important to tackle that. And of course, it's important to say that not everyone who self-harms will go down that path, but we really wanted to find out some more about how we can prevent people going down that path.
You were speaking to and keen to speak to a whole range of different people and organisations. Can you give us a sense of the sort of conversations that you were having in terms of putting this report together?
Yeah, I mean, it would be invidious to mention everyone who gave us evidence, but we heard from professional groups. So, we heard from NHS representatives, Foundation Trust and others, the Royal Colleges gave evidence as well. We had young people's organisations who are tackling this issue, like Harmless and Young Minds. And we had evidence as well from young people themselves, which actually was really influential in the report and in expressing just how people have difficulty in getting assistance, really.
Now, I think that's really interesting that you were able to speak directly to people who were either self-harmers themselves or had a direct experience of it. Doing this program and speaking to people with a whole host of mental health concerns or illnesses, a whole host of different things. One of those issues I've always almost found it quite difficult to deal with is those who self-harm, because I feel still, even within a more open conversation around mental health, that there's still a stigma around self-harm. And I think it's something to do with that sort of the physical sign that something is happening on the inside as well. And it's a conversation I've often found a difficult one to have until you speak directly to the people who've been affected by it. And as soon as you have that conversation, it seems to make a little bit more sense.
Yes, I think so. It's certainly on Wednesday when we had the launch of our report, we had one of the people, Izzy, actually came and told us, and it was clear from the comments received from the 90 people taking part in the webinar that Izzy's evidence really hit home and made real the problems that people have and that we've described in our report. So having that evidence from people going through that experience is really vital. Vital to this report, but vital to our understanding of self-harm.
When people talk about self-harm, they will think about it being a physical act, but quite clearly from the work that you've done and the work that's highlighted, it's very much about what's going inside somebody's mind as well. And it's important that we have that in mind at all times, isn't it, when talking about the issue of self-harm?
Oh, absolutely. It is all about how people are feeling themselves about other situations. So it's a sign, if you like, rather than the issue itself. So what we need to do is work out how we can help people to deal with some of those issues. And that's why we've talked about having an early intervention model involving very early stage discussions and help from community groups and others.
When people first reported, they said, well, if I'd have got the help then, I wouldn't have found myself in the situation, or the self-harming wouldn't have got as bad as it did. Potentially suicidal thoughts wouldn't have emerged. That's absolutely crucial, isn't it? That at the point at which somebody thinks about committing an act of self-harm, of course they need help and they need intervention at that very moment, don't they?
They do, and they need the right kind of help. And it's not always kind of medical help for the wounds. In fact, it's not usually. It's that help with understanding how they're feeling, what's got them to that place, and trying to look at how and learn from others about how they can cope with those feelings and the acts that they're doing. So that is really important. We heard some very good examples of support that was going on, and we'd like to see that really spread much wider. That's why our report is calling for, you know, greater involvement from the third sector to spread that good practice. And it has to be the good practice. You know, we've got to get it right. It's not just going to be anything. It's got to be the right kind of support to ensure that people don't go on to those next stages. I mean, what they were telling us was that actually, if they self-harm and they end up in hospital, actually, sometimes, not always, sometimes still people brush them off, or, you know, you're not ill enough to get the help you need. So we've got to do something about that, I think.
And in terms of that system has got to be in place, hasn't it? That flags up where somebody's potentially at risk and actually they do end up in hospital. There has to be a mechanism in place that protects that young person and helps them in the future. Are those mechanisms in place right now at the moment?
From the evidence we heard, no, they're not. Clearly there are examples where it is, and we know there are studies going on looking at self-harm in certain hospitals and trusts. Academic research is going on, but what we want is real practical support for people rather than just being stitched up or cleaned up. They need help from the appropriate mental health specialist to follow up on that before they get to a stage where, you know, they find themselves in hospital having tried to end their lives. And only then, at that stage, are they getting the help. It's got to come much earlier if we're going to tackle this issue, really.
I was going to say, I mean, it seems strange, doesn't it, that there wouldn't be more of a joined up approach, that, you know, there weren't systems that flagged people up as potentially vulnerable. And then if something did happen, that they still then wouldn't find the help and requirements that they needed as well. And all the while, the risk, is it not, to those young people is increasing, isn't it? That the slower you are day by day to make an intervention, the increasing risk to them going on to potentially take their own life, or to, you know, maybe just live a life feeling unfulfilled and unhappy with those those issues that is causing the self-harm never being solved.
Yes, that's right. And we did hear evidence that people were either being referred to IAP services, who were saying, actually, this isn't something that we can cope with, and then having to wait a long time for help from CAMHS or other mental health services, which is why you get this kind of escalation through the NHS system. So much more important to focus on the early intervention and make sure that people get the help when they need it as early as possible. One of the other things we identified as well was that link with other organisations like education, for example. Now, we know in the NHS plan there are proposals to have link teams between schools and mental health services. We need to see that put into action and linking up with the other recommendations that we've made, which are really about having that help at the very earliest stage. And of course, we need much more understanding from health professionals as well.
What's holding back the system? What's preventing all of those system changes from coming in and working? Is it based on funding? Is it based around stigma? Is it based around some people just not really being quite sure what to do when they see signs that somebody might be either self-harming or at risk of self-harming?
Well, I think at the moment it's a lot about people not understanding. That's why we were keen to do the report, to get an understanding of how it feels for people and to make positive recommendations about how we can change things. Of course, there are loads of detailed recommendations in there for the government, for the NHS. Of course, funding is always an issue. If you don't have the finances, the money to support either third sector organisations providing support at that early stage. And one of our recommendations is that there needs to be much clearer commissioning longer term rather than bidding year to year, for example. So that's one of the recommendations. But the other thing is making sure we have those pathways through that people can be identified and picked up and referred at an earlier stage. And of course, you know, we heard that sometimes it's difficult for people, for the professionals who see these young people, because they don't understand it either very often, not sure what they can do to help. So we need to have, that's why we've made the recommendations we have, to try and get that, I won't say a seamless course, but to make sure that services are available and are joined up.
That I was going to ask you about that one next, Liz, if you don't mind, about sort of the professionals who, of course, are, you know, they're working in schools, if they're working in medical environments, you know, they've taken on a lot of work, they've got a great deal of qualifications as well. Is there at the moment a standardised set of guidelines that those people, teachers, medical professionals, would recognise if they saw someone presenting with signs of either self-harm or at risk of self-harm? Or is it still something which is much more nuanced in terms of maybe they get a feeling, maybe they know where to turn, maybe they've been on a course, maybe they've had some training, or maybe they've not?
Well, I mean, I can't speak for all professions. There's a whole range of professionals you mentioned there, from teachers to classroom assistants to nurses and doctors and others. But certainly what we heard and what was coming through when we had our launch the other day in the comments from people was about the limited amount of training that there is for people. And clearly there's a wide variation. I think people want to do their best, but need to feel confident about how they can help and where they can refer.
Is that something that the report touches on, the sort of advocating a training system that can be introduced into things like schools so that teachers not only know how to respond, but they also know how not to respond as well? If they all had the same set of skills, they could have training which they might never require, But when they did require it, that training could potentially save that child's life or have a hugely profound impact on their, their future, if you like.
Oh, yes, definitely. And we heard in our evidence about, you know, the experiences of, you know, people at school, some people finding a great deal of help, others not really. And in fact, as Izzy told us the other day, that her very bad experience in school being excluded from certain classes, for example, because there wasn't that lack of understanding and kind of lack of a risk assessment.
Can I ask you about lockdown? And I know that the report touches on that, and we don't have all the evidence yet, and in many ways we're not at the end of the current situation, but a suggestion that the issues that you've highlighted have been exacerbated by lockdown, and you're also minded to look at a post-pandemic demand for services. Just give us a sense of scale on this one, if you can.
Yeah, well, we'd started our inquiry when COVID-19 hit us, and we were taking evidence. And as you know, it wasn't about COVID-19, but we did find that there was an impact because of people being so isolated, because of not being able to mingle so easily, and, you know, people being kind of, I say invisible, that's not quite the right word, but closed within their own environment. So you don't get that mixing that goes on. So I think it's something that will be something that we want to follow up. We have highlighted the issue with the minister already, just from our early findings. So I think that is something we're going to be looking at some more.
Presumably there would have been young people who were going through potentially through services to help them with the situations they find themselves in at the moment. And many of those services, of course, disrupted by lockdown as well. There will be a follow on from that, won't there? You know, those problems won't have disappeared during lockdown.
Yes. Well, I mean, we know generally because of COVID-19, there will be that impact. We've yet to see exactly what it is. And there's been a range of experiences, but there undoubtedly will be that. And this applies to this group as well. Not able to mix, not able to speak to people, and to get the face-to-face services if they're already getting help that they got before.
Can we talk about community response to this? And it's actually, you know, one of the key points that comes forwards in the report, the idea that there are organisations that are well-equipped to help these people out and that this is something that they can take a lead on. There's sort of two camps on this one. The first one was, why do we need to look for a sort of outside help? Why can it not come internally? But also, it's a tribute, isn't it, to some of those incredible organisations that have got incredible expertise, and it would be wrong for us to not use that expertise where possible.
Yes, and one of the things we were conscious of and what came up was this idea that you know, you can be helped at an early stage without it becoming a kind of, how can I describe it? Medicalized, I suppose, entirely. You know, there is clearly absolutely a place for help through the NHS. Absolutely. But what we focused on, what we heard really good examples of, was help in community groups, set up people with an understanding of the issue and how it can arise and what's behind that, you know, that move to feel the need to self-harm and help in coping with that as well and getting through that. So we had some great examples. The problem is it's kind of let a thousand flowers bloom. Well, actually, if we find a nice flower, we want it blooming all over the place. So that's one of the things that we want to do. And we are clear that it has to be good quality help as well. You know, not just a name and a tag. It's got to be help that really assists people in this situation. So it needs to be quality.
And I think that's one of those interesting things as well, whereby when people talk about, you know, mental health, we should consider it the same as physical health. And, you know, if you break your leg, you go and you get it fixed. But actually, I think it's where mental health can be a little bit different, where you're not looking necessarily, as you said, for a medical response. A young person presenting with signs of self-harm may benefit from some sort of a social environment, you know, a drama class, a sporting club, or something along those lines as well, which... We need to know about those opportunities and sort of make sure that they get flagged.
It's got to be the right kind of peer support. So people who will know the best way of helping have been through it themselves and can help, as well as others in the organisation. So it's absolutely important that we get that best kind of help as well.
Moving forward now, Liz, in terms of the take-up of the reports and its recommendations, what's the process that's in place now?
Well, we've already had, when I say we, I mean the officers of the APP, of the All Party Parliamentary Group, I've had some meetings with, we met with Nadine Dorries at an early stage to highlight the recommendations of our report. We've met with people, officers in the NHS and the Department of Health, and we will be following that work up through. Clearly they saw the full report just shortly before the launch, so it would be invidious to ask them for an answer straight now, but we want to keep pursuing this so that we achieve some of those recommendations and see how we can improve services for people, young people who self-harm. We've got to do it. It's too important to leave. So we're going to be on the back of the ministers and NHS England to make sure that we follow through.
But, and again, from the issues that we've talked about there, there needs to be, doesn't there, a gold standard in this one, that if somebody does show signs of self-harm, there needs to be a system in place, which means, well, this is how we can help this young person. And sometimes that's a whole family approach, I guess, but also specific to that, to the that young person, that takes into account their educational background and their home environment and all of those. Some people will say, well, why doesn't that exist already? Why aren't those processes in place already? Because every day those processes aren't in place, that's young people potentially at risk.
Yeah. And in some places, too few places, they do exist. So what we want to do is share that learning and share that good practice so that people everywhere, you know, whether they're in urban communities or rural communities where services can be difficult to access, we want to spread that good knowledge, that good practice for the benefit of young people.
Liz, thank you so much for your time today. We wish you all the best with the findings of the report as well. For people who listen to this now who are thinking, oh, self-harm thing, it's an attention-seeking thing, or it's just a phase that young people go through. What would you say to people who still carry those sort of thoughts with them?
No, it's definitely not attention-seeking. We've seen too many young people who hide their self-harm for it to be anything like that. It actually is a sign that something isn't right and we need to try and help those people and help them early enough that it doesn't get worse.
Liz, thank you for speaking to us on the programme. Wish you all the best.
Okay, bye.
I hope you've enjoyed this week's podcast. Thanks for checking out Mental Health Monday. My name is Mick Coyle. You can find me on Twitter at Mr. Mick Coyle. You can also find me, Mick Coyle, on Facebook as well. Don't forget, if you want to speak to somebody about your mental health, you can do so. The Samaritans, free to call on 116 123. You can find mental health services where you are. Just look for the Hub of Hope. Type in your postcode. It'll find those mental health services close to you. And for support in a crisis, you can text SHOUT to 85258. That's if you're experiencing a personal crisis, you're unable to cope and need support. Shout to 85258. That's a text line. Do get involved in those services. In an absolute emergency, always remember the number to call is 999. Thanks for downloading the podcast this week. We'll be back next week with more Mental Health Monday.